Because I will ask a structural engineer, boy, that seems like a lot of concrete and steel that goes in. Are you sure? Yep, that's right. Well, that's an awfully big air handle. I mean, that just seems like an awful lot. Nope, that's what we need. We don't understand the mathematics behind it. And frankly, I think the engineering community has hidden behind that for a long, long time. They've hidden behind the fact that we don't understand your math. The building officials don't understand your math. Structural engineering reviews are done by peers that are hired outside of the regular review process. And so there's this understanding, there's this hidden mystique that, yes, this is what needs to be done. And we don't have a lot of ways to challenge that. Except now we're finding out that there are different ways to do things. We are beginning to understand that engineers are not gods. That really, there really is a rational explanation behind everything you do. And unfortunately, a lot of things have been done by rules of thumb that were outdated when they were established. In the book Natural Capitalism, it points out that probably 85% of the heating and air conditioning systems are designed according to rules of thumb that were outdated when they were there. And we're beginning to understand that. As developers, we know that there is something more. We know that high-performance buildings don't have to cost more to build. They don't. A lot of people will tell you that. The contractors, the subcontractors, the engineers. A lot of it's because they're lazy and they just don't want to do the work to figure it out. But it doesn't have to cost more to build. Operating costs are often more efficient, important than first costs. If I can save 30% of the energy, 50% of the energy, 75% of the energy use, that has ongoing value to a commercial real estate structure. Now, not all of you are working for for-profit entities, but still that ongoing office, it may not be able to be capitalized up front as we can do in a private business, but there certainly is value on an ongoing basis that needs to be monetized, that needs to be recognized, that needs to be understood about this. That there are offsets, different proven strategies that use less energy and are kinder to the environment. There's different ways to do things than just what you've necessarily done before. Also, we recognize that most of the important mistakes are made on the first day. First day of design, we're going to build this building, the structural engineer, okay, we'll use a 30 by 36 bay, well, we'll have this kind of an air handling system and we'll do this. And after that, 85% of the mistakes are made on the first day. After the first day of design, there's very little that you can go do to go change those major decisions. So we're beginning to understand that, and we're beginning to say, let's take a little bit more time, let's look at some more things here, and the design process is changing. And there are materials, and the understanding of what materials can do have changed. Again, there's another representation in the book, Natural Capitalism, that in 1970, a building that took 100,000 tons of steel could be built today with today's materials, technology, and understanding by 35,000 tons of steel. Does my structural engineer know that? I think he does because of the flexibility in what he's shown, but does he know that? HVAC systems can handle 700 to 800 square feet per ton. And yet 300 to 350 is still a number that goes along. When we did the Banner Bank building, we put in, I think the switch gear that the electrical contractor spec was 4,000 kilovolts or something like that, or kilowatts. Huge. And we're using, our peak load during this last summer was about 680 watts. He could have gotten away with 1,200 if he'd have understood what was going on. And it's just kind of one of those V8 moments. Boy, I didn't know that. I wish I had known that. But different ways of looking at things, really getting to the loads, are what we need to do. We can do more with less. Contradictory as that sounds, we can do more with less. So what I want to share with you today is how engineers can add value to a real estate development, because I think there are some things here that you may not understand. Part of it has the business attack, of just how developers make money. What is it in our business that makes things work? How do we get a profit? How do we get water out of this thing? This is really slow. But how do we make money at that? So a couple of the things that I'm going to say from my point of view as an architect, not either one. I was probably a frustrated architect engineer in another lifetime. As a developer, as the guy that ends up paying the bills, what do I want you to know? First of all, I want to challenge you to really get back to engineering, to really engineer every building. So many times we see that there are people that are hiding behind what they have done before, the typical designs that they have done before, because they work, they haven't been challenged, they haven't been sued, and so they continue to do that. Are those standards still relevant? Are they taking into account everything that we're really trying to do in this building? Understanding how real estate value is determined, because I think a lot of you don't know that. I think a lot of people that develop real estate don't know that. And that's why I try to do this, say, well, how do you value? Because a lot of people talk about cost, but cost and value are not necessarily the same thing in a real estate transaction. And then I'm going to challenge you to understand how your discipline interrelates with every system in the building. You can't do one without doing three. And unless you understand two, why bother? So that is where we're headed on that. A couple of interesting concepts just to help maybe change your point of view a little bit different way of looking at some of these things. Winston Churchill once said, we shape our buildings and then our buildings shape our lives. Think about that. I have a son in Dayton, Washington. Lives in a small, in an older home that's close to 100 years old. It doesn't have a lot of insulation. It's expensive to heat. It's expensive to maintain. Their life routines revolve around the responsibilities they have in that with that house. Gathering wood, chopping wood, running the wood stove instead of the other, bundling up to keep things down. Their whole behavior changes in response to the environment that they live in. We shape our buildings, the environment that we create in the cities, in the communities that we have. Not just the architectural look, but the way that we interact with it can affect how we do business, how we run our lives, and if it affects how we do business, it can seriously affect our profitability. I love Natural Capitalism. It's a book that has really changed my life. Design is really just applied foresight. See, I'm used to having a monitor here. Having to read this sideways is just a little different. What you do carefully and responsibly to achieve what you want later. Okay? Good design does not have to cost more than bad design. We get a lot of bad design. We get a lot of good design. A lot of people think good design has to be more expensive. It doesn't. Whether it's architectural engineering, it doesn't. It just has to be smarter. So fundamentally, why do we build buildings? Well, as a developer, I build it to make a profit. I make it to rent out to tenants. Basically, what we do with buildings is we build buildings for people. Okay? Now think about that for just a minute. Change the way you look at things. A lot of times we're in the building business. We do HVAC. We do concrete. We do something else. We design the electrical system. We design the structural system. And we forget that the reason we have a building is to provide space for people. If you're involved in designing schools, I'd say let's not just build a school, but let's build the most efficient learning environment that we can for our children on a budget. I sat in a meeting with representatives from Boise State University, and there was somebody there from the State Department of Public Works, and they're talking about efficiency and how I'd like to do this, and he just kind of sat back there and said, hey, I'm just here to get it done as cheaply as possible. And I wasn't ready. I'm ready now. Next time I get that chance, I say, excuse me, sir, I'm a taxpayer in the state of Idaho. I have children that are going through the public school system. I feel your responsibility is to create the most productive learning environment you can for my children within your budget. I'm not asking you to bust the budget and spend a whole lot more, but let's find ways to do the best we can for the people that actually occupy that. Let's not just build an office, but let's create the most comfortable and productive work environment we can for our tenants or our employees on a budget. A lot of the studies, a lot of the things you hear, our productivity is the place where we can gain more value. We can actually provide more value through green development than anything else. Squishy concept, you can see it, you can get your hands on it, but it's just, you know, you're not sure what you've got it there. But that is really, truly it. If we can provide that, that is a huge benefit. People can actually focus on work rather than trying to get comfortable and complaining about the person in the office next door. Let's not just build condominiums, but let's create communities. And there's a different thought process there. If I'm building a condominium, I'm building two bedrooms, I'm building this, I can sell it for $300, $400, $500 a square foot. And yet if you're building communities, there's a different responsibility. There's a responsibility to the town. There's a responsibility to the neighborhood. There's a responsibility to the community that you are creating by the people who are going to choose to live under this roof. What kind of a community do you want that to be? Well, that could be a community, I want diverse income levels. I want diverse creative levels. I'd want diverse employment levels. In order to get a community, some interchange, the viability, the breadth and scope of what we enjoy here in America, I want to bring all that into it. I want to have something where people can stay and live out their lives. They want to be able to age in place. Those kinds of decisions come into it when you're building a community, when you're designing a community that you may not get when you're designing a condominium. Well, that's a lot of work, isn't it? It takes a little more time. Yeah. That's what we went to school for, wasn't it? So that we can continue to learn, how to do things better, not just copy what we did the other time. So what is your role with respect to people in the environment? As engineers, you may not have thought about that very much. What is my role with respect to the people? Usually we think about systems. But what is our role with respect to people? Civil and geotech. How much can I build into the, how efficiently can I design this foundation? What is the soils telling me they absolutely have to have in order to provide this, but no more? Because we're putting things into the ground that are hard to get out. We're using resources that could be employed somewhere else to somebody else's benefit, but we may be burying more than we need to here. Structure, we are creating the form and the protective skeleton of the building that houses these people. How can we do that in a way that is easy for them to interact and ways to get around? How can we make it so that it is flexible in the future and utilize the least amount of resources we can? HVAC. How do people respond to their environment? How do we keep people warm? How do we keep people cool? Not just how many tons of air conditioning do we need to fill a space, how are we actually going to keep people warm and cool? Plumbing. A lot of things, not just transferring waste and dealing with that, but how can we use this to transfer energy? How can we do this most effectively to get it to the point of use that we need to? And electrical, how can we make this environment so that it fits, it's flexible for people, for the old fogies like me who do everything on a yellow pad, to the younger generations are doing everything on computers. We want different light levels. We perform more productively in different light levels and different tasks. Give me something that will really help the people do that, not just meet codes. I remember when we did a building back in 1999, I kept challenging the electrical engineer. I just said, boy, that seems like a lot of light fixtures in the corridor. Boy, this is that and the other. No, this is what we need. There are specific things required by code and all that. Well, you know, I found out this year what code requirements are for exit corridors, and it's about 1 or 2 foot candles. And I bought a light meter that I wish I had done some time ago. And found out what 1 or 2 foot candles really looks like. And I went back to the other building that we did, and it's about 40 foot candles, not 1 or 2. And I was right, you know, I was right, but I was stonewalled by this lack of, you know, I am the engineer, I am the scientist. So really, what is it with respect to people in the environment? So let me challenge the way you think of this just a little bit. This side has a few more people, so I'm going to have you design an HVAC system for a cathedral. This is a cathedral. It was built in the in the 1600s, and it's fairly drafty, but it's very large. And your job is to design an HVAC system for that, okay? Big space, tall ceilings, very... You get to work. Your assignment is to keep the parishioners' feet warm for an hour a week. I think you can get that done a whole lot faster than they can, okay? And yet really, what do we need to do? What are the people there for? What are the people there for? They're in a cathedral to worship on a regular basis for a short period of time. We don't need to take care of everything forever. We need fuzzy slippers. We need hot rocks. We need rechargeable electrical batteries to go in the socks that, you know, in the fuzzy slippers that we hand out or something like that. We've got different alternatives, really, honestly, to solve that question. That's really what we're trying to do. Make those people comfortable for an hour a week. And it's a different standpoint. Well, let's think about that. How much of the systems do we really need? So is this half empty or half full? Half empty? We got a couple? Half full? The rest of you are waiting to find out what your client says, right? I say this glass is misengineered for the purpose intended. I didn't want this glass. I wanted this glass. Holds everything that the other one does that I needed. It still has a safety factor. Okay? I didn't want this glass. This is what I got. This is what I wanted. This is what the principal of the engineering firm wanted me to have. There is no liability for inefficiency, only for insufficiency. I'm the speaker, I can make up the fact that I can title that old engineering maxim, but think about it. You know, when you design a system, you're not responsible for making sure it works as efficiently as possible in the traditional sense of design. It's there, it can't fail, there's got to be enough. If it does, they're going to come back to me. It's got to pass code, it's got to meet code, it's got to do this and that and the other. But you don't have to operate, you don't have to build it. You don't have to operate it. You don't have to pay the operating costs. An engineer's liability is one time, but operating costs are forever. There are ways in which we can do this. We can get things done at a much more efficient manner now than we could have somewhere else. And I'd like to show you, oh, that was fun. Let me do that again. I listened to something about presentations. I said, you've got to be careful with fonts and colors, but I thought, you know, maybe there are a couple things you can do to just try to emphasize what's going on there. I'm going to give you a little bit of Real Estate 321. Now, this isn't an elementary class. This is an upper division class. It's something that has to do with commercial real estate, but it's really, really important that you understand, because this is how I make money, okay? This is how I make money. Value is not the same as cost. That's something that a lot of people don't understand. A lot of people in the building community, a lot of developers don't understand that. Profit is not the same as cost. And really, the reason we're doing something is to make a profit, not to get a low cost, but a profit. And a lot of people just assume, well, cost, then that's how I make my profit. They don't understand, wait a minute, if I can control value, if I can affect value, I can increase that spread. Profit is really value minus cost. Most people are so intent on cost that they forget about value. And there are so many ways that which green buildings add value to a piece of property. I've identified 8, and it's just really interesting. They're very diverse, and they add up. They may be in different pockets. Some might be tax benefits, not real estate. They might not show up on an appraisal, but they add value to something. Basically, commercial real estate is valued by taking income from rents, less operating expenses to create a net operating income. And the net operating income is then analyzed either by appraisers to create value, banks to determine loan amount, or investors to determine cash flow and their investment return. So the net operating income, typically, in a valuation standpoint, is divided by the capitalization rate to get value. Now notice, nothing about there is cost, okay? It's all about income. So what can we do to increase income? Because that is really where we improve the net operating income. If we can reduce expenses, we can't necessarily change rents because those are determined by the market. The market's not going to necessarily pay us $2 or $3 a square foot more just because we're cool. The lead building platinum building that HDR did when we were doing the Banner Bank building is McKinney, Texas, and we are 94% leased and they are about 40% because they spent so much money getting their lead platinum systems in there that they can't give affordable rents. We focus more on operating expenses in an efficient business way. And the value then is improved by increasing the net income. Value is directly related to net operating income. So keeping that in mind, what can you as engineers do to help me make money? Remember, you thought this was about you, this is about me. I'm your customer, I'm the one that's got to live with it. You've got to make this work for me. First thing you can do is reduce energy expenses. The second thing you can do is reduce energy expenses. The third thing you can do is reduce energy expenses. The fourth thing you can do is do less, use less. And the fifth thing you can do is to understand relationships to help everybody else do less. So let me go back and talk about this a little bit. I'm not being just glib by saying location, 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 energy, energy, energy. First thing you can do is make sure that what you design is as efficient as possible. How can you design this so that you use the least materials, the least energy that you possibly can? That's your first responsibility. But that your responsibility doesn't end there, because you can also help other people be more efficient. What can you do to make the other disciplines? We found one of my favorite stories with the Banner Bank building is the marketing guy said, can we build this without columns, because it's so much easier to lay out for tenants. He's thinking of people. He's got to sell it to the people. And the structural engineer says, well, yeah, we can use these castellated beams. And we can get rid of about 10 columns around here. And yeah, they're a little more expensive, but you save the cost of the beams. And I said, OK, if it's net zero cost-wise, let's go with it. Well, I found out, as we're going along in the charrette process, the electrical engineer points out, hey, you know, we don't need as many smoke detectors in the building because we're not creating these beam pockets. Normally a 24-inch beam or an 18-inch beam is going to create beam pockets. Each one has to be protected by smoke detectors. So typically on a floor, we got away with one smoke detector instead of 40. We eliminated at least 400 smoke detectors from the building. Well, that's an electrical expense, but it was afforded to us by the structural engineer. How many of those things can you do that help other people save money, that help other people reduce energy expenses? That is a critical, critical part of what you can do, is helping the other disciplines be more efficient in what they do. And then the last aspect of saving energy is, okay, when we've gotten our piece as efficient as possible and we've looked at these integrated systems and gotten that more, how do we go for the fruit on the top branches, the high-hanging fruit? What is that? Now, maybe we can't do this on everyone, but each incrementally as we go along, maybe we can find ways to do it. What is the impact of increasing wire size on electrical? Rather than just going with the code minimum, one or two, you know, points bigger on the wire size reduces resistance. There's not as much heat loss. It's going to affect cooling. It's going to do that. Yeah, but the effect is only 1 or 2 or 3%. Well, great. If you're at 100% level, standard building code, that's one thing, and 1 or 2% doesn't mean a whole lot. There are a lot of easier things to do. But when you peel that down and you're operating at 50 or 60 or 70% below ASHRAE standards, now 1% or 2% is now 3 to 6% or 5 or 7% of what is left. And if we're trying to get to where we are going to generate everything we can, that means a reduction in the more expensive generation costs that we have here. So now that is progressively more expensive, but the replacement cost of the renewable energy is also there. So there can be reasons where even these small little incremental changes, homes, red things were anywhere from 10 to 15% of the energy use in homes is vampire devices sucking watts out of the grid just to be ready when you turn it on. It's your television, it's your DVR, it's your home theater system, it's your computer monitor, things that look like they're off just waiting for you to click something to turn it on. 10 to 15%, that's 400 to 500 watts continuous 24/7. How can you, as an engineer, figure out a way to just turn that off when people aren't here? You know, let's hook it up to a circuit controlled by an occupancy sensor. Oh, that's pretty easy. Let's put a switch on that people can do. They have to then, well, that's true, but it's a lot cheaper than the occupancy sensor. It's easier and typical. There's simple things we can do that can have huge benefits that we really don't think about until we get past making ours as efficient as possible without looking at how people actually live and work within this space. So then go after that high-hanging fruit and how we can do that. Helping others do less, use less. We found that the further we push things, the simpler the systems got. Underfloor air man, there really isn't. There's nothing under that floor other than wires and pipes and stuff that really doesn't have anything to do with air, because it's just, you know, is wide open there. Pretty slick. If it works more simply, then why complicate it? Find out ways we can do this. And a lot of times we try to do too much. You know, we got home from World War II back in the 40s and 50s, and we had all this industrial power, and we said, let's conquer the next horizon. And so we started air conditioning everything, and we started building more better cars, and we started paving everything, and so we put this industrial might to it. And then in the 80s and 90s, boy, if we've got a problem, let's throw computers at it, we've got that. Can we do it with less? Do we really need that system? Do we really need everything there? Is there some way that we can cooperate with someone else to help them do less? That is a big challenge, ladies and gentlemen. That's what I want to be your takeaway point here. How can I save energy in all aspects? How can I help others do what they do? And how can we all do what we do with less? Pretty simple. If we use less, there's more for somebody else to do something with later. A few examples from the Banner Bank building. We use the geotech engineer. A lot of different reasons just came up with this idea for drilled pier foundation. Well, did a little bit more than just do piers. He actually went the extra step to calculate the skin friction. So many times what we'd done before, a building that we'd done earlier was done on end-bearing friction, and he threw in the skin friction on here. And by golly, I think there is about 50% less concrete in this hole than there was for the previous building I did, which was 50% smaller than the Banner Bank building. I mean, really, when you look at what went into the other hole and what went into this, there's a whole lot less. Did he take any chances with the structural viability? No. He did engineering. He went to the science. Well, what did that allow? By not having so much junk in the foundation, we were actually able to put a water tank in there, 20,000 gallons, to collect rainwater, to collect stormwater, reutilize it through the building. We couldn't have done that with a standard foundation plan. It was something that gave the mechanical engineer something to do. Here are the castellated beams, and what we showed you on that was able to get wider footprints without the interior obligation, and how we were able to reduce not just the smoke detectors, but also to create to maintain a 13.6 floor-to-floor height. That's what we'd done before. That's kind of what people were looking for. By using that, we could keep the ceiling area down and still raise the floor up there. We didn't have to change our floor-to-floor and still got that. So we could still put our underfloor air distribution in, which is just kind of an interesting cost analysis all in itself. Create this wonderful plenum under there that allows you to do modular electrical equipment. Now, instead of doing custom fabrications for every switch and plug and data device that's in there, we can do things that are, we can fish under the floor, we can come back to a point, we can plug them in, we can put it exactly where it's needed, rather than, oh, we might need one there, we might need one there, we might need, why do we need one? Well, they might want to plug a lamp in there. Well, they might want to sometime. You want me to spend $125 in every single office in the building because they might want to plug a lamp in there sometime? Let's do this. If they want to plug a lamp, we can pull a floor box over there. So, same thing with the lighting system there. That just gives us opportunities to be flexible in the way we do that. All of the sensors that we use are able to be replaced and moved very simply without having to throw those devices away. So, if an alternate approach is cost neutral, I want the more efficient choice. Castellated beams. Yeah, they're more expensive. Wait a minute, I'm getting rid of all this other stuff. Cost neutral, boy, then the environmentally sensitive thing to do is a no-brainer. I'm surprised how people don't think about this. Contractor and the same engineer on another building said, look, if we do castellated beams, we can do this. They went through it and found out it was going to cost $5,000 more. They didn't even look at the electrical savings. They just said, oh, steel's more, we're not going to do it. They had it all designed, that's the way it was going to be, they weren't going to change it, even though the engineers were willing at this point to do it because they'd seen what they had to do. If the first cost is higher, there may be a trade-off in another discipline. I mean, that's one thing calculating just cost, and going through and saying, we've got to nitpick everything along here. If we can't justify the cost, we've got to do it, because These systems are so integrated. They are so involved in here in different areas that we've just got to understand that an HVAC system is not an air handler, a hot water source, a cold water source, and a chiller, and you know, just the main components. It's also the envelope, the windows, the lighting system, the business use for the building. I mean, if this is a building that is going to be set up as this is, for example, with large intermittent meetings, but otherwise it's empty, your design should be very different than what it is if it's going to be a call center where there's, you know, one person for every 20 or 30 square feet, whatever they're squeezing into those things now. But it needs to be analyzed for what it is. Those need to be regarded as part of your system and what you do. And finally, the energy efficiency increases the value of the building and can trump everything else. Now, this is a message that you need to get through to your clients. You need to get through to the developers, the owners, and the buildings, that energy efficiency can trump higher cost. You just have to understand how buildings are valued. Half full. And they may not understand that. It may take a while for them to realize how that adds value, that value and cost are not the same thing. People are so inclined to think of that as the case. The moderately more efficient house or car does cost more to build, but when they're designed as whole systems, the super efficient house and car can often cost less than the original. Natural Capitalism is a great book because it makes these tremendous claims on electric vehicles, and then it shows a business case on how you can do it with technology we already have, on buildings that use 70 or 80% less energy, and then gives a business case on the technology that we actually have and how we get there. I'm pushing the buttons here. So question everything, ladies and gentlemen. Question everything. Do we even need that part of the HVAC system? Do we need a chiller? Do we need a hot water source? Do we need a cold water source? Do we need a fan? Can we do it without this? If we can eliminate systems in the building, think of what we could do. If I had an R14 window, you know, U value 0.07, I probably don't need a perimeter heating system. I don't need a perimeter heating system. I don't need the pumps. I don't need the hydronic pipes. I don't need the flat plate heat exchanger. I've eliminated a lot. Boy, those are expensive windows. Well, that's an expensive perimeter reheat system that I can completely do without. And often at these meetings, the engineers are saying, oh, gee, there goes a whole hunk of what I designed and percentage of cost and whatever it is. No, the whole paradigm has got to be changed, that we're looking at the whole design cost. Your job may be a little easier, but I'm willing to pay for the expertise of someone that can do that because you are going to make my building more valuable. Our design team, every single consultant showed me. I mean, I saw how the electrician designed things where it saved me money, how the structural engineer saved me enough money to pay their fee, architectural, how they did things. I mean, I thought they were spending money on sugar for the frosting, all these little gewgaws on it and everything. Hey, we have leased up 94% of the building in 18 months. The last building of our size in Boise, Idaho that went on the market took 4 years. There are buildings out there that have been there 2, 3, 4, 7 years that are still not at 94% occupancy. And I've got to tell you that a lot of what it is because the message of energy efficiency, of resource utilization, of high-performance buildings resonates with people. It resonates. It is something that people want to do more for the environment. They just don't know how. And when we can show them, when we can provide them that leadership, then we can often guide them to that point in time. Do we really need public utilities? Can we do this with solar? Can we do this with the rainwater we have? Can we recover heat from the servers in order to provide our hot water? That's one thing we're going to look at. Boy, we missed that on Banner Bank, is how many servers we're putting in 4 or 5 different places. We had to go back and put about 35 tons of cooling in specifically for that because the typical solution was creating hot spots in the slab above, really crazy stuff. We realized if we'd have put those all together in some kind of co-location facility, we probably only need 20 tons of cooling. And if we put that with an air water-to-air heat pump, we could pull that out and we could probably get just about almost all of our heating for the building from waste heat that we already have. We're spending money to get rid of it. If we just move it, we could do that. Do we really need that? How can we source that closer to home? How can we make this more efficient? How can we do it simpler, less expensive, and more efficiently? If you'll start asking that question over and over and over again, why not, why not, why not, why not? We'll get back to the science. You know, how do people get comfortable? How does temperature and airflow both contribute? Sometimes we forget, you know, or we just, you know, never haven't factored that in because we just got enough there that it doesn't matter. Boy, you just do it this way and go back to work. You know? The other thing I'm going to challenge you to do is let you know that LEED is not the goal. Okay, even LEED Platinum is not the goal here. I think LEED is a good thing, but it's not the reason to do something. LEED is a tool, it is a roadmap, it is a framework, it is an outline, and it's very good at all of those things. It helps get us where we want to go. But we shouldn't be doing things because it gets us LEED points. We should be doing this because it is the efficient way to do this. If we can save 30% of water, we can get exemplary performance. If we do 40%, well, what if we can save 50? What if we can save 80? What if we can save 100? Why not push it that far? Well, we can only get 30%, you know, for energy reductions, 38% gets us our 10 points. Well, yeah, so what? That's not the goal. The goal, true sustainability, is to be generating all of our own energy, processing all of our own waste. That is the goal we're trying to get to. Dennis Wilde, in a conversation with him about a year ago, just said, you know, I started challenging everybody that if they're not saving 50% energy, they're not trying. And I used that at a conference in Pittsburgh, and I had a couple of people come up to me, boy, that's, I don't know, you know, how do you do, this is really hard, and design, and I asked them about the design and getting through that. Are you using underfloor systems? Are you doing displacements? No, the client wants to use heat pumps. The client wants to do this and all this. And they're making excuses for why they were doing things only incrementally different from what they'd done before. And basically it was, I can't help you because you're not trying. You know, you're really just not getting there because you have to look at the whole system. LEED does provide a framework to do that, and it's a good framework, but we can do more. Our design team likes to say platinum. They keep asking, sorry, are you going to do that green thing again? Are you going to do platinum building again? And we say, platinum is so last year. It's nice to have somebody that gets it, you know? It really is. LEED is a good place to start, but a bad place to finish. Let's use it as a tool. Let's use it for our clients as a tool to help educate them, to help educate ourselves, our competition even, that this is a good place to start, but we can do better and we can add more. So how do engineers add value? You can add value to my building by saving enormous amounts of energy. Reducing operating expenses increases the value of the development every single time. Reducing energy is going to increase value. You can do more with less. Reduce the size of the equipment, reduce the space that it takes, reduce the amount of air you have to do, find ways. You can help others to do less. Teach people, you know, part of this is educating the architects and saying, you know, if we put more insulation in the building, more, you know, change the airflow, better tightening of the envelope. What about the windows we're using? Are there more efficient windows? Generally, you know, architects aren't asked about windows by HVAC engineers, and they should be. They aren't asked about, you know, the lighting loads in the building. They don't consider that into it, and they should. You know, these are all things that we can help each other. It is truly a unified process that needs to work on that. So our development team motto that we have devised is really very simple. We're stuffing the envelope. We're not pushing the envelope. We actually have an envelope. We're going to do something with that envelope, and we're going to stuff it with everything that we can to make it as efficient as possible. We're stuffing the envelope, striving for nothing, and when we get to nothing, we plan to do even less. We are the ultimate slackers. So let's do it for the money. Let's do it for the glory. Let's do it for our children. Let's do it for our children's children. Why not? And then let's do it again. And then let's do even less. Thank you very much.